Welcome to Battle Ready. I'm Ricky Chavez. On this show, we talk about readiness, not only on the battlefield, but for business, family, leadership, and life. Today's conversation is about financial readiness and how families prepare for uncertainty, build resilience, and make decisions that are rooted in values rather than fear. My guest, David Kleinman, MBA, BFA, co-founder and financial strategist for Kleinman Financial. As part of a son and father, I had to put that right because I saw that one of your shows, services team, David helps families overcome obstacles, grow, thrive, and become more knowledgeable about their financial matters. His perspective matters because financial confidence is not only about numbers, it's about discipline, trust, relationship, and building the future that you can withstand pressures. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ricky, for having me.
You know, finances is always as near and dear to my heart. And the reason I say that is, you know, I've had a few guests that talked about finances, but I always kind of like to throw my family, me and my wife, into the stream, because I read somewhere earlier, 1 in 5 marriages struggle and end in divorce because of money matters. Not necessarily about the dollars and cents, but just how they approach it. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to give you a little bit background, Ricky, on what I went through is I went through my own financial struggles at a certain point. And I was classic. I didn't tell anything to my wife. I had a lot of credit card debt. And, you know, again, like, it's just embarrassing. And I didn't explain it to my wife. I didn't tell her anything. I felt it was, you know, my job alone to carry that financial burden. And so as a result, again, didn't disclose anything to her. So when it came to light, you know, eventually just, you know, it was just so bad. It just had to come to light and we had to make changes. You know, it was like a huge shock to her. So, you know, thank God she was stuck with me in spite of it. And we were able to work our way out of it. And now we're doing very well. But again, you know, the most important part, and, you know, could be something we're going to talk about through this show, is just having that clarity and that communication with your spouse. Because again, like when I was doing it myself, I felt like, you know, again, it's even makes it even harder because you feel like you're all alone and you're by yourself and you don't have that, you don't have your most important and valuable partner to work it out with you.
No, it's interesting that you say that. So you, I'm assuming based on what you just said, you kind of were the spearhead of your family finances, right?
Correct.
But what I see now a lot of times is people have separate accounts. You know, like me and my wife, she has her account, I have my account, her money goes in her account, my money goes in mine. I'm a little bit older, so I have a retirement account that she has access to. But you know, we really don't talk about finances, and we're so different just by based on our upbringing. You know, my mother was German. My mother, you know, put the money away for a rainy day. And my wife's like, YOLO, you know, they only live once. Let's use what we use. How do you feel about those kind of situations?
Well, it's actually a typical type of situation again. I mean, usually one partner is the saver and one partner is the spender. And it's that meeting of the minds together that, you know, forms the basis of a solid marriage as well. I mean, just coming to the compromise and recognizing that there's a place for each. There's a time to spend and a time to save, you know, but again, it has to be, I still feel like, you know, the most important part when our finances finally came to a point was that to have everybody on the same page together, you want to come up with your own goals, your own values. And that's really what we do with Kleinman Financial. We want to make sure that everybody's on the same page so that as finances go up and down, because they always will, and we call it the certainty of uncertainty. We know this because something's going to happen that you're not expecting. And during that time, you want to go back to the budget that you created together. That's a very important part of financial health. And to say, okay, does this fit in with the budget that we've come to together?
You know, it's funny you say that, the budget you put together. I don't think my wife and I have looked at or worked a budget ever. I mean, we did when we were in the military because we had very few pennies, man. We made very little money. So then, you know, we paid attention, went to the grocery store with a calculator. You know, we made the difference of, you know, which cereal we would buy based on the price, you know, hoping, hope, hoping they would taste the kid same, the kids wouldn't give us a bunch of grief over it. But I mean, it was a very, very off time. And when I met my wife, I was in the military. So it was like, okay, that was our choices. Once we, you know, retired from the military and went to corporate America, you know, some of the financial strains changed a little bit. We had a little bit more money. So we started wandering basically. But we're going to come back to that in a minute. Let's talk about you, your family. So you were in hedge funds, right? Before?
Correct. I was at a hedge fund for 7 years. And then my son, who started Climbline Financial about 2 years before, was brought in by the lead estate planning specialist at Merrill Lynch, who got on his own, was looking for a successor. Brought my son in. My son ended up buying him out. And then he asked me to leave the hedge fund and come and join him in our financial planning firm, which I did. And it's been about 10 years since then. So we call it son-father team. It throws people off a little bit, but we like that part of it too.
You know, I saw that. So let's talk about the dynamics of working with family, you know, father, son, but in this case, the son, you know, had the business and you joined. How's that dynamic?
Right. So when my son came to me with the opportunity to help build Climbline Financial together, you know, I saw a chance to combine the experience that I brought to the table with his new perspective and energy from, being a young age. Like he brings in a lot more technology. But again, we could offer, you know, that son-father dynamic to families as well. So whether it's someone that's just starting out or someone that's more in my age bracket or somewhere in the middle, you know, we're able to offer a perspective to on all that sides. And sometimes that combination is really valuable to bring to the table to our clients that are interested to see. So I'll say something about long-term care maybe, or something about retirement funds, how you want to have it done. You want to maybe be more conservative at my age. Whereas at my son, if he's talking to someone his age, maybe you want to be more aggressive because you have time to make it back when the market goes up and down. So it brings it together and gives us, I think, a very unique offering and sets us apart from other advisors.
So basically you complement each other.
Correct.
So when you think about financial readiness, what does it mean beyond simply having money saved? I mean, what is that?
I think it comes back, Ricky, to what we talked about before. It goes far beyond, financial readiness goes far beyond simply having money in the bank. It's about knowing that your financial decisions are aligned with your goals, your values, and the life you want to live. It means having a plan for both the opportunities and the unexpected events that life can bring. As we said, there's always going to be something that's going to come up that you weren't prepared for. But do you have the right protection in place? Are your investments working towards the goals that matter to you? Are you prepared for retirement, for your family, and for the possibility that circumstances may change? But most importantly, financial readiness will give you that confidence. You may not be able to predict what's coming next, but you know you're prepared as best as possible for that certainty of uncertainty.
So, you know, my daughter works with me, and I say she works with me. She basically bosses me around, kind of. So family dynamic, especially with the difference in age, the difference in opinions. And I know we're talking on a finance class, but I'm going to talk more about a leadership, a cohesive team kind of thought. How does that work? Do you guys have a lot of discussions on what your thoughts and maybe your differences of opinions?
Well, it was an interesting aspect of the whole dynamic working with my son, Ricky, is that, you know, I knew who he was as an adult and as a child, of course, you know, growing up together, etc. But when we started working together, I didn't realize until we started talking about it how common and how much we had in common were our views towards, you know, financial literacy and financial education and how we wanted to be with our clients. It turned out that we were much, you know, naturally on the same page, which I guess is not surprising. I mean, we are related. So, but it turned out that, but we, you know, just having that common respect, which I, you know, my son also bosses me around a lot. So I definitely understand that too, but there's that going to be that common respect. Like he has some ideas, whether I agree with them or not, but still I let him, you know, but you know, I'm in agreement with him to try it. You know, let's see what we can do. As on opposed, the other time he'll come and consult with me, you know, and ask me, you know, what do I think about this? Is he being more too risky? Is it maybe a more conservative? So we'll have that discussion. But at the end, you know, we'll respect each other's opinion and let and you know and and allow, you know, there's mistakes going to happen. So allow those mistakes to come in.
Well, you know, I know those conversations. I mean, you know, like you said, you know, my daughter, you know, I raised her, she's lived with me forever. But they still, they form their own personalities, their own thought processes, right? But a lot of the things also have to go back to the fact that as he was young, when he was younger, were you in the financial industry at that time also?
No, so I've been in different industries. I was in the jewelry business in the New York area for many years, or 20 years. I had my own company. But when 9/11 hit, that's, and you know, that really turned it around. That made everything very, very difficult, and started pivoting at that time. You know, some of the, it was a bit of a different dynamic, and not to go into here, it's a long story. But you know, that's when I saw, you know, that I had to get out of the jewelry business and to get into other, and to get into it wasn't right away, but I was went into eventually to the hedge fund world.
Gotcha. So coming up next, we will talk about financial literacy, emotional decision making, and why knowledge becomes a form of protection when your families face uncertainty. Be right back. Welcome back to Battle Ready. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming, both in English and Spanish. If you're on the move, catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and wellness, leadership, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. Welcome back, David. We're talking a lot about finances and talking a little bit about dynamics, you know, and the show Battle Ready. We talk about you don't know what you don't know. A lot of people are scared to get into business with family. All right. I know that I told you during the break, you know, my wife and I are in the same industry. She's a manager for multiple realtors, and I have a small team within one of our groups. And we are so different in business. We do the same thing. Ultimately, our goal is to take care of the clients, you know, make them feel good. But then, you know, my wife's like, I'll never work with you. And my daughter and I have been working together like 6 years. So what are your thoughts about that? What if somebody's out there listening, thinking about maybe getting a business with family, what would some guidance you give them?
So it's not for everybody, Ricky, as I'm sure you realize also. It does help that it's in sales. So it gives you that common goal that everybody knows, like we're here to, you know, create sales. It's not blurry. It's not gray. It's a pretty black and white. You know, if it contributes to sales, that's the important thing. One of the areas though I mentioned to you, Ricky, was that I found it, I had a pleasant surprise when I started working with him, that we actually had a lot in common, much more than I expected. Like we saw things a lot of times the same way, and just having that basic respect. But on the other side of it, you have to make that, you know, you have to have that separation too. Like sometimes he'll come over for the weekend and he'll just want to talk about business the whole time. And, you know, the family's around, they're not interested. And I just want also a break. I don't want to talk about business right now. And sometimes, you know, he'll just keep going because something he's thinking about, and he'll just keep going and going. And I'll just have to say at a certain point, you know what? I'm here, it's Sunday. I just want to take a break. I don't want to talk about this anymore. You know, let's leave it for when we're in the office, or let's leave it to, you know, when it be, whatever, you know. So you do have to make that separation between business and personal. And it's not always easy.
You know, and it's interesting. And my daughter, my dynamic, which is the opposite, right? So I, you know, we get together and I'm thinking about stuff, and we have the family, the kids are in the swimming pool, grandkids are all, you know, here looking in the pool, and daughter's sitting next to me, and then something pops up, and then, you know, that has been a very difficult journey for me, because it's like my mind's going a million miles an hour all the time. And the other piece of it is, you know, and sales in our businesses, regardless of whether it's finances or real estate or whatever, we're kind of at the mercy of our clients, right? In real estate for sure, because, you know, they'll see a house at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, and they want to go see it tomorrow, you know? I think you have a little bit more control of it because you have business hours, I'm assuming.
Yeah, correct. We're not, it's not like you, because your busiest time is the weekend, because that's when people are able to go see homes. And it's always time sensitive too. So you want, you've got a competing bids, you've got a, a dynamic process. So you have to go with whatever time is proper. For me, it's, we're setting appointments and we're setting a time. Like, I'll work on Sundays. I will take a Sunday appointment. My kids are out of the house, but my son's got three young kids. He doesn't want to work on Sundays. He blocks that off. So, and that's fine too. He's able to do that. For us, somebody is having, they want to talk right away on a Sunday, but it can usually wait one more day for us.
Sure. But I think the other piece is, when you're having conversations with your family member and they're trying to bring across a point that maybe you feel like you know already. And I know I learned this kind of early on that I am to the point right now when my daughter tells me something or is going to explain something or even a thought or an idea, I used to say, well, I know this or I know that because, but I've learned that because her mind, she's 38, I'm in my 60s, so our minds are looking at things differently for sure. But it's like I just sit back and listen because I feel like it's a learning point that I might give up by saying I know because it kind of cuts her off. But then she'll just have this brilliant idea and maybe goes about telling me it differently. But then when, at the end, it's an amazing conversation. How do you feel about that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's something I talked about before, that just the mutual respect you have to have one for the other, and that you have to give them a chance to to express themselves and to have a full conversation. Nobody likes to be interrupted in the middle, to be and be told, oh, I know that already, what you're saying. It's basically, saying, oh,
Sure.
I don't, you don't really have anything to contribute valuable here. So, I don't want to hear the whole thing, right? Even though, I think my son does it to me too. Like, he'll interrupt me too, but I'll just keep talking if I want to. Like, I won't let him interrupt me, because I think it's a natural response, but you have to pull back and have that respect. Because, as you say, first of all, you may be missing something that's valuable and could be important. And number two is that it's just a common courtesy.
Well, no, that's for sure. And you know what? It's just, I think the thought process is like, they have a different an approach that I would have maybe never thought about because I mean, AI, come on. The younger your social media, all these different things, there's so many different ideas. And my idea of social media and putting something out there is like my daughter's like, nope, she deletes it out because she kind of controls it, right? She'll delete something I put up. She's like, no, you didn't want to do it that way. I'm like, okay, I've gotten to the point where I have thick skin, so it doesn't matter, But because she's very good at it, right? So you have to yield to your weaknesses sometimes, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what we do is we have like a wealth strategy workshop that we're doing like twice a month, that my son will say on Zoom, and we're using a lot of social media for that, and he's basically in charge of that. I have my own responsibilities in that area, but we've basically delegated each side of it. So I do what I do, he does what he does, and basically autonomously. So that works for us.
So we've talked a little bit about emotions and interactions between team members. What about emotions with clients? What's some of the emotional barriers that are set up, kind of negative lifestyle for a couple that's having struggles with finance?
Well, fear is something that has to be fought against, and that's really where we come into play as advisors. Is because, you don't want to, when the market dips and all of a sudden you want to sell your portfolio, that's actually the wrong time. And there's no loss that is taken until that sale is done. So, you can look online, the market's down, the market's up, whatever you feel about Trump, whatever. But, he says oil is good, and then markets go up, and then oil is bad, the markets go down. So you don't want to respond to every type of, you have an emotional response to every time the market goes up and down. We know over time, the long term, the markets will perform. So you need to have that patience. And that's why it's important to go back to what we talked about before, to have a plan, to have the budget, to do your goals, and to have your objectives all set out. We have actually a little card game that we play with clients to get started with, which is a deck of 52 cards with 52 values on it. So that when the clients come down to the end, they know what their top five values are. And that's what now we're going to build the plan around. We don't have any prepackaged solutions. Everything is going to be based on what the family wants to do together. So that when the market is down or when things go against, you're already prepared because we want to, that's the point of having diversification, that you want to have some insurance, you want to have some investment, you want some retirement plan, some long-term care. You want to have a bit of everything so that when one area goes down, the other area is fine.
So with that being said, so when you do this game, the 52 card game, do you do it as a couple or do you do it separately? I mean, how does that work?
Right, so it's pretty interesting. And we find that, first of all, most people have never done this kind of exercise anyway. So they haven't gone through to see what are their top five values. So it depends on what the dynamic is with the family. Sometimes we'll take them, the husband and wife, into separate rooms and let each one do their own. Sometimes, we'll see that they'll do it together. They'll work on it together. That's a call that we'll make when we get to know the client a bit, because that's the most important part of the whole thing, is developing the relationship, getting to know the client, getting to know what they're all about and what they're looking to accomplish and what their dynamics are. I mean, it could be, like what you've talked about before. Maybe the finances are separate. Maybe you and your wife, you both have separate accounts. Maybe the husband is the one that makes the financial decisions. Maybe it's the wife, maybe they make it jointly, or maybe some is joint. So we want to get an idea of what that dynamic is when we first get to know them.
So how does their past, their upbringing, play a part in, how they handle finances or their emotions towards finance?
Well, you said it yourself, Ricky. You came from a German background where, it sounds like, every dollar was looked at, and it sounds like you're the saver in the relationship, whereas your wife is more on the spending side, more looking at, let's enjoy ourselves together. And both aspects have a place, right? Sometimes you do want to enjoy yourself, money. You don't want to be like the miser duck. I can't remember his name offhand, but kept all his money on the side and never spent a dollar. But on the other hand, you want to make sure that you being financially responsible as well, and that you're not just, in our opinion, not just going and spending and not knowing, where the funds are coming from or how much you're spending or whether you can afford it. Sometimes that's how people get into credit card debt. Because they don't look at that. They don't look at what they can actually afford. They spend above their means because they haven't really gone through the exercise.
So we're getting ready to run into a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how families can build personalized plans and align money, values, protection, and a long-term goal. We're also going to talk a little bit about this book my wife and I just read. It's called Die with Zero. We'll talk to you right back, David. Welcome back to Battle Ready. Financial readiness is not one size fits all. Every family has its different goals, its pressures, obligations, and dreams. In this segment, we're going to talk with David Kleinman on how to explore how financial strategy becomes stronger when it's built around values, protection, and long-term thinking. David, welcome back.
Thank you, Ricky.
So listen, before we get started, if somebody wants to continue a conversation with you, how would they reach out to you and maybe schedule some time on your calendar?
Well, I do have a Calendly. I don't know if the link could be put up there, but you can reach me on LinkedIn or my cell phone. I'll give it right now is 201-898-6960. You can call me, you can text me, email me, david@kleinmanfinancial.com. It's Kleinman with a Y, Klyman financial.com. Through our website is kleinmanfinancial.com. Same last name, of course. So any of those ways through, as I mentioned, through LinkedIn or Instagram or Facebook, any of the regular social media, and again through Calendly, just to book a time on my calendar is the easiest.
All right, great. So, David, how do you discover what truly matters to a family before building a strategy? I know you talked about the 52 the card game. Is that the only way?
No, I mean that just really surrounds the conversation. I mean, strategy doesn't start with numbers. It starts with that conversation. We spend time, You know, we're not in a rush, getting to know the family, what they've accomplished, what they're working towards, what keeps them up at night, and what they want their money to ultimately accomplish. And sometimes the most important goals aren't financial at all. They might be about providing opportunities for their children, taking care of aging parents, or building a business, to giving back some charity, as you had mentioned, or creating a legacy. So the most important part, and Ricky, I'm sure you know this too, is just the listening. You know, just to listen to them. And we're not trying to fit a family into a financial strategy. We're building a financial strategy around the family. We don't have any prepackaged solutions. And really, that's really the most important part.
And so that's why I'm saying, why is a personalized approach so important to financial planning? Is because it kind of generates and helps them, you know, make sure they're on the path that they need to be on. Do you ever find out sometimes they really don't know what they don't know, so they're really not sure what the path is?
I would say 95% of the people have never done this exercise. They've never even thought about it. They've never had the conversation. You know, they have some vague ideas about it, but they haven't really done it as specific as what we're asking for. And sometimes it takes time for them. Sometimes we say, you know what, go back, discuss it, come back to it next week, and we'll have another conversation. We'll talk about this more when you yourselves have had a chance to work through it. And that's one of the values of the card game. It just gives them that structure to be able to start thinking in those terms.
But how should families think about protection and growth at the same time?
Well, look, at protection is obviously very important. God forbid something should happen. You want to make sure that their wealth is it, your wealth is going to be protected. But protection and growth are really two sides of the same financial strategy. You need to have both. Obviously, growth is important because families want their wealth to keep pace with their goals, with inflation, and the future. But growth without protection can leave everything you've worked so hard to build vulnerable to an unexpected event, which we know, as I mentioned before, the certainty of uncertainty. We know something's going to happen that's unexpected. So you need to have that protection to make sure that you continue on your path and that your plan is not disrupted.
You know, I was talking about the book that you know, my wife and I, we just avoid the conversation. I mean, we've avoided it for like, I mean, we've been married 30 years, and you know, I have my stash, she has her stash, and you know, sometimes it's just amazing when we find out what the other one has. But we don't, I mean, we don't care about it. We just it's kind of like a game to us. But I think just as of recent, you know, it's we read this book called Die with Zero. And you know, one of our biggest challenges have been mostly on my side. You know, my wife, I have four kids, I have 13 grandkids. My wife wants to, you know, take the kids here, buy them dinner, do this, do that. And I'm like, no, they got jobs. She's like, listen, I want to see my kids happy, and I don't want to give it to, I don't want them to have the money after I pass, because it doesn't matter. And in the book, it kind of talks about this. So she finally got me to read the book. We read it together, and it made a little sense. And one of the things it says there is, you know, money has no value. It's the experiences and things you buy with the money that are important. What are your thoughts about it, and how would that fit into a plan?
Well, again, I mean, it's that dynamic between, you know, the spending and the saving. I mean, certainly I agree with that. But again, you know, first of all, money doesn't buy happiness. So, you know, you can give you like I'll buy a present for my grandkids. I have six grandchildren and six children. So the my son, I buy a toys for the grandchildren and it's there for like a day and then next day it's gone. You know, it's sitting in the corner. So that, you know, the buying material goods for them, you know, is not necessarily, you know, going to have the effect that you're expecting. Look at, we have to look after ourselves. Our number one priority is to make sure that we're set, that we're looked after. So if you've gone through the exercise, and whether it's separately, like you and your wife, or together, that's, you know, up to you to do. But you know, you want to make sure that you're going to have enough money, that you're not going to outlive your money. And God forbid, you know, if you do need long-term care down the road, you need to be in a facility, you can pay for that and not be put into some, you know, into some lower quality residence that's not going to, you know, not going to be what you want. Or you need to want some ha to come into the house, or you want to have enough money. On the other hand, though, you know, you don't want to be a hoarder that, you know, or miserly, that if there is a way to do to help your kids, why not help them if you can afford it? But you have to be able to afford it. You can't sacrifice your financial health and your long-term confidence and security, you know, to give away to the kids. And sometimes we see that the parents all, you know, or the mother just wants to give everything to the kids. You know, well, what about yourself? Oh, my kids will look after me. I'm not so sure about that.
You know, that's such a valid point. I know my mom, as she progressed in her life, she had COPD and she got sick. Moved her to here with me, and then it was too hard for us to care for her, so we ended up looking at assisted living and talking about sticker shock. You know, and she had money, but, you know, based on the different places, she paid, and then my brother and I kind of split. We each doing another $1,000 apiece, and man, it was $5,800 a month for the care, and we were bewildered at that. And I don't think most people are prepared for that, or even have an idea of what that could cost.
Correct. I mean, look, at that to me is actually a pretty good deal, because if you're in the tri-state, like New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, it's anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 a month. So we talk about long-term care policies. We do a lot of insurance. What we like the most, if you're young enough, is you get a life insurance, permanent life insurance policy that has long-term care rider on top of it, meaning that you're able to take out from the death benefit in your life if a person got sick or ill, or you needed it for long-term care down the road. So, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, life insurance is only for if someone passes away, but that's the industry has evolved over the last 25 years or so. And this is a more longer conversation, but, you know, if you had that permanent policy that you're able to take out from the death benefit to pay for long-term care, that's a huge benefit besides the cash value, besides the life insurance. You know, I have two clients right now, they actually own a business. And we did a review of their long-term care. So they thought they had great long-term care that they had taken out. They're now in their mid to late 60s. They took out a long-term care policy in their 50s that gives them, I think it's like $1,500 a month of benefit. You know, they thought they were all set, but, you know, $1,500, I mean, what are you going to do with that?
No, that, oh my gosh, yeah, that's 100% right. And I mean, my mom, I think she had like, it was $3,800. Something like that, and we still had to kick in. And fortunate enough for us, you know, we work and we have the income to be able to help her with that. But we see, and I talk to so many people that are struggling, and it becomes a very much of an emotional burden for the family, and unintentional. But it's like, you know, you want best for your parents, right? So what do you do then? So yeah. You help them with that.
Correct. Part of one area that we do, that's part of the goals. Like, do you, like I mentioned before, do you have parents that you may have to look after? Or do you know what kind of financial situation are they in? Are they looking toward to you to help out, you know, when you become later on? Maybe they have a house, but people aren't aware of how much long-term care can cost.
So, you know, let's go back to the game and the cards and the different things on the cards, right? So when you sit down with them and play the games, do you ever find that sometimes the clients that you're talking to and you're working this game with them is they don't know what they don't know? In other words, there's some, because they don't know about the future, they don't know what to get ready for, or they've never even thought about it, that you ignite something in their minds that they're like, wow, I never thought about that. This is actually a priority that I'm nowhere near ready for.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, that's always what happens. I mean, there's always going to be some area that they haven't thought about, because look at, people are busy with their day-to-day lives. You know, that's what they're thinking about. And that's part of the problem, because, you know, oh, well, I think about my estate planning, or I'll think about, you know, this type of ideas, you know, retirement down the road. I've got plenty of time. But, you know, it's always important to start today. You know, even if it's a little bit, just start today, get it started. Don't kick it down the road. That's what we always advise people to do, you know. But going through the cards, it's more of a the cards like are more, you know, emotionally, you know, they're more common aspects to it. Like, Are you adventurous? Are you more secure? Are you religious, spirituality? That those are the kind of questions that it asks. So if a person is adventurous, maybe he's looking, to retire early at 55 and take a trip around the world, and how will his financial plan, can his financial plan and financial assets support that? Or if he wants to leave a legacy, do he want to leave a legacy to your kids? Or, so people say, no, that's up to them. They're going to be on their own. So if you do want to have a legacy, what do we need to do financially to create that legacy? So the first step is just those general values, like what is it that you are all about? Like, are you security and all those type of ideas. And then once we've gotten the profile of what most people, the most common card is probably family. Everybody picks family and has that at their top five. Then there's other ones like whatever it would be, whether they're religious, spiritual, or whatever else that they want to do. But again, what does family mean to you, and how does that fit in financially?
Okay, Dave, we'll be right back. In the final segment, we'll bring this back to the readiness in action, how families can prepare for setbacks, stay disciplined, and build legacies that last. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Battle Ready. Stay connected to this show or an Every Now Media TV special. Live or on demand, anytime you like, daytime or nighttime. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku and iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. If you're on the move, catch the podcast version on www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, wellness, and leadership and beyond. Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. So we'll welcome back David to the show. David, welcome back.
Thank you.
So we talked about resilience and family financial plan. How common is it when they're trying to get battle ready?
So I think there is a strong parallel between our resilient financial plan, and we call our podcast and everything Re Resilient Riches, and battle readiness. Is that if you don't prepare for the unexpected, once it happens, you prepare for it before it happens. So in battle readiness, like this is the name of yours show, Ricky, is you don't know exactly what you're going to face, but you train, prepare, and make sure you have the right resources and a strategy in place. So financial planning is very similar. A family can't predict a job loss, a health event, a market downturn, or business challenge, or any other unexpected change. We know something's going to happen at some point. That's just the way life is. So you have to prepare for those possibilities. And that means having the appropriate protection, having liquidity. So appropriate protection is really, maybe life insurance, or maybe it's something else like an annuity, something like that. Liquidity means having, 3 months of an emergency fund, diversification, having your money in different pots, and just a strategy that can adapt when circumstances change. And just like readiness isn't about expecting something bad to happen, financial planning isn't about being pessimistic. Right? It's about just being prepared enough that when something unexpected happens, you don't have to make decisions from a position of panic. And that's where what you talked about before, the emotions come in, and that's when, people will panic. Oh, I'm afraid I'm going to lose all my money. Let me sell right now at a loss and go from there.
Say to the viewer out there that's thinking, I don't make enough money. I have too many bills now. I can never, sit down and talk with somebody that is a financial planner or in a situation like yourself. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we don't agree with that. And I could tell you how many times we've spoken to someone that has that same opinion and says, oh, I don't have much money. But then when we start drilling down and start putting together, the financial fact find, which we do a pretty in-depth, oh, I have 100,000 here, or I have 200,000 there. And oh, I forgot about this pension that I saved up for. And I forgot about that 401k I had at my three jobs ago that I never rolled over that I should bring in. That's $50,000 in there. So, when you've gone through the exercise, then you start to see perhaps that you have more than you have. But again, just to do your regular expenses, it really becomes very clear. Like I had a couple, He just started making money out in actually in New Mexico. He started making money, and we did the financial fact find and put it all together. And it turned out, their biggest issue, he's making over like 120 now, which is great, but he's got a lot of student debt, and that's really what he has to attack first. His wife has got a lot of credit card debt. There's some credit card debts, 23%. So you want to start attacking that, and you want to see what your expenses are. She's spending a lot of money on her DoorDash lunches, and it's a very common area. If you stop, you could save probably, $1,000 a month if you just make your own lunches. So those, it becomes pretty clear once you go through the numbers.
So, when you're talking about this, my question that really is burning my mind is, when you're talking to a person about their finances and they don't agree, how do you help them understand a different perspective without, really a lot of pushback?
Well, Ricky, you know this in sales is that, you can't convince anybody of anything. They have to agree with you. And what we are all about is just really education. We just, most people, and it's shocking to find out, and I'm sure you see it too, how much financial illiteracy there is in the world. People just don't know. They just don't, there's no, the schools aren't teaching it. There's no real way to for people to learn it. You can't really go online because you don't know, what's right and what's wrong. So our point of view is just to bring education. And if we can, do that and to clarify some areas and some issues like what we've talked, based on what we've talked about, that's our goal. Now it's up to a person if he wants to accept it or not. Like many times we'll make recommendations and the client won't take them. So, what can we do? I mean, we hope that, it'll be fine for them, and we don't wish anybody bad, of course. But we think, we make those recommendations based on our perspective and what we know as a professional, but it's up to them to accept it. So, it's the same thing. Like a person goes to the doctor, he's got pain in his head or whatever, and the doctor, prescribes medication or surgery, and the client, and it happens, we've got clients that are diabetic that don't go to the doctor, and they just don't want to do it. There's nothing really you can do about it.
And I make the joke all the time in today's world, everybody has a degree in Google and Chat GPT. So, that those interesting conversations when who knows where the facts are that they're getting. And you said earlier, they read stuff and everything's not true and everybody's not an expert on a subject that they post on. But one of the things I've heard is one of the biggest challenges when you're dealing with people in the financial world is they make money, but they don't know what they spend it on.
We hear that all the time. He says that we had one client, and I always come back to this one. She was a psychiatrist. He was a cardiologist. So between the two of them, they're making maybe $500,000, $600,000 a year, maybe more. So she comes to us, referred to us by her CPA, and she comes and she says, "I know I'm making money. I just don't know where it goes every month." And she has a little pink book with where she writes down all her expenses. And she's got like three pages. Some of the pages are falling out and she's going through it. I mean, that's not a way that you can see what you're doing. She's trying. She's ahead of where other people are because at least she's writing it down and she's keeping a list. But until they go through our software and we put it together on a spreadsheet, she probably had 40 or 50 different line items. Like she had ended up, one area where she was spending money on was like three different babysitters. Right? Her kids were already in school. And we said to her, "I don't even think you need one babysitter, or maybe you don't need one." But she says, "You know what? These are like family to me. I'm not ready to get rid of it." But at least now she knows where the money is going, and that if she does want to cut back, she knows where it would be. And so where maybe there's an opportunity to come later on when she doesn't need, like she'll be able to say to one babysitter, "Okay, we don't really, we're not going to really use you anymore," or other areas. So what, but you have to go through that exercise, and then it becomes pretty clear where your money is going. But everybody has that question. I know I'm making money, I just don't know where it goes every month.
I totally feel that. I literally just sent my CPA my taxes for 25. So I downloaded my bank statements, well, all my bank transactions, all my credit cards, the Venmo, the PayPal, everything into a, I have this spreadsheet I've been using for years. And the other day I learned Copilot. Oh my gosh. I had Copilot, you know, review it and put sheets together. My CPA was totally amazed with it. And yep. then I found out we spent X amount of dollars at McDonald's. And actually that's my wife. I don't go to McDonald's. So boy, did I have a field day with her. So let me ask you this. So what do you hope clients feel after working with your team? What's some of the feedback you get?
So we want our clients to have the confidence that they can take care of the people they love, create opportunities for the next generation, and make an impact in their communities. You know, we want their children to inherit more than assets. We want them to inherit the values, knowledge, and sense of responsibility that help create that wealth in the first place. For me, the greatest legacy is when a family can look back and say, we used what we had to make a difference. So that could mean education for their children or supporting a business. But ultimately, I hope our work helps families move from simply building wealth to building a life and a legacy that reflects what matters most to them, and that they're prepared, you know, for the when the uncertainty of uncertainty comes. They know that they can be confident because they have a plan in place.
We're running out of time. Once again, how can somebody continue conversation with you?
So just reach out to me on my email. I'm david@climanfinancial.com. My cell phone is 201-898-6960. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn through our website, which is climanfinancial.com. And you can just book a time on my Calendly. It's just david-climan. And book a time or call me, text me. You know, I'm easy to. We don't have anybody in between. We don't like to have that secretary in between. Just call me.
Perfect. So thank you for sharing how financial readiness connects with family, a resilience, and long-term leadership. Today's conversation reminds us that being battle ready is not only about readiness for pressure. It's about preparing with discipline, building with purpose, and protecting the people and values that you matter most to you. I'm Ricky Chavez, and this is Battle Ready. Thank you for joining us.